The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Well, that's Elvis Presley, a little less conversation here on Northumberland 89.7. And joining us in the studio right now is the mayor of the municipality of Port Hope, Bob Sanderson. And joining us is Rob Washburn. He joins us every week, of course. Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. Rob, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Very glad to have you. And Mr. Sanderson, welcome to the show. We'll just call you Bob for the duration, if you don't mind.
That sounds good to me.
Okay, good stuff. So lots of things happening in Port Hope recently. Obviously, there was a story last week about a lot of people having just been let go from tourism and economic development and places like that. You're still working on, obviously, putting together a financial plan for the year, I guess a strategic plan. I got some questions from listeners who wanted to ask some questions. Somebody suggested that the town should do a forensic audit like they did in Brantford in order to find efficiencies. Is that something you guys have thought about at all?
It's been suggested, and we would absolutely turn it down. I think it would be a really big expense and probably confuse the issue.
Is that right?
How would an audit confuse the issue?
Well, a forensic audit is not an audit.
Okay.
I think there's a significant difference.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So auditing is generally done anyway within the municipality, so we have that. I think more important, what we try to do is identify expenditures at a finer level, you know, kind of like line by line rather than grouping things. So David Baxter, who's been doing the work and has been there just 2 years, I think our budget now has a lot more ability for people to read it, to look at it, to question it, kind of where, you know, dollars drop in certain buckets. I think they're more aligned now. So I think the transparency, the ability for people to look at it and understand it is a higher one. Still work to be done, but it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. A forensic audit, though, might go back and be able to rationalize things that have gone on in the past. Do you see any value in doing that?
I can't say I don't see any value in it because I think that would be wrong. Is it worth the time and effort? Without having something that's either misappropriate or some major concerns for the past, I think we're looking at the future a little bit harder than, you know, that.
Okay.
Well, we know that the voters in, for instance, Brantford, where they did do a forensic audit recently because there was a lot of controversies over some of the spending habits of the former mayor, and I'm not going to mention any names, but surely there's been a lot of concern about the way money's being spent in Port Hope. I know that we only had one returning councillor to this council, which shows that there was definitely some concern by the electorate out there as to what was happening with the ship of state, if you will. And I just thought, you know, the forensic audit would go a long way in helping to dispel a lot of those myths. Even if it doesn't identify anything new, what it does show is that, yes, you're a brand new council and you're willing to address the issues of the past in order to create a clearer path to the future. Is that something that has been presented to you in maybe that way?
It has been presented, but again, I'm going to reiterate that a forensic audit is basically going to be done because you think there's been impropriety. Expenditures, things under the carpet. And I don't think that that's been the case. We don't see any sign of that. And I think it could be very distracting and rather expensive to go through that process. And again, I really think our energy needs to be pointing forward. If something came up that we felt was inappropriate or illegal or something like that, I would definitely, you know, follow that track because you'd have to.
Well, since we're talking about the budget, maybe this is a good time to talk about the one that you just passed. I understand that I think you're the only municipality in Northumberland that actually had a decrease in municipal taxes. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I could. And, you know, maybe that we're provincially leading the pack. I'm not sure. And the budget process goes on for a long time, as you know. So when I took office, I requested each department to come back with a zero-based budget increase. After growth. And we have a 3.8% growth. And of course, that just gets built into the normal cost. When they do their first draft and their second draft and they keep coming back, the requirement is to at least look at zero. I need to know what zero looks like so we can implement if we want to. It means cutbacks. It means significant work on the part of the departments. They really have to dig deep and hard. We were able to achieve that. And after that, after the zero, we arbitrarily added 1.5% to the levy. And that amounts to just over $200,000. The reason to do that is I had them put it into a contingency fund. And a contingency means we have gone through some significant cuts. We've got through some capital expenditure decreases. We may have made some errors, and we acknowledge that maybe some of the cuts are deeper than we want. We won't know until we go through the process for a bit. But you can't do all that and then have no reserve money to spend either on the investments or to go into reserves. Our reserves are low. So after the 1.5, then we have in the municipality two funds that have been established for hosting the low-level radiation cleanup process. And the federal government established two funds, each of $10 million. And they generate interest. That has always been incorporated into the budget process, and I pulled it out of the budget process. So it's kind of like, Granny's going to give us some money. Let's keep it to the side. Let's don't count on it. That required a strong accounting process to get to the zero. We arbitrarily then had add 1.5, knowing that with the interest payment after levy, which again showed the optics of the situation, people could see where their money's going. That resulted in a $30 to $35 decrease, you know, on the average household taxes in Port Hope. And I think it's manageable. We certainly intend to evaluate the next few years and putting a strategy in place that says where do we want to go. If we put our strategy in place, we'll need to fund that strategy. But that strategy is going to come out through public engagement. It's not going to be seven people sitting at a table deciding strategy.
So where did the cuts come from?
A lot came from capital expenditures, public works.
So what sort of projects then? Because capital works, that's infrastructure. So we're talking about roads and sewers and
paving,
sidewalks.
Yep.
So there's going to be less of that
plows.
Going on?
Yes, there is.
Now,
yes.
When you talk about plows, we're talking about snow plowing now in the wintertime.
Yeah.
So
capital expenditures on equipment. As an example, if we need a new truck, rather than buying it this year if we don't need it, we have put it off.
I understand you're not going to be picking up yard waste as well.
Well, the county's doing it, so the county's going to do it for us. We're not going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. We are paying for it, but just in a different way.
Well, we're already paying for it at the county level, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Well, there was a question raised by somebody who said to me, well, you know, this sounds to me like they're using the interest from these low-level radiation funds, both for Ward 1 and Ward 2, because they each got their own separate fund, to deal with these rate cuts, offer a reduction in taxes by using that interest money to do so. So you can correct me if I'm wrong on that. The other issue then became, well, how many years have they been doing that? And what are they going to do when they have to start attaching the principal? Are they going to start using the same principal for the same thing?
Okay. Let me clarify. That $10 million is basically, we don't touch it. Right. And we're establishing, so it's sort of untouchable.
Right.
What we did this time was take 80%, you know, of the interest after expenses and applied it directly against the levy. 20% goes back to invest in the fund so that the fund will continue to grow over years and generate, you know, an equivalent interest. Hopefully interest rates do go up eventually, you know, at least for the municipal perspective, maybe not from your mortgage. But the reality is that fund should be able to contribute to the economy of the municipality at a consistent level through time.
And that's sort of what it was set up to do anyway, right? I mean, was that not the original intent to have that interest used to offset increases in rates, for instance?
Each of the two municipalities, the Township of Hope at the time, right, and the Municipality of Port Hope, had sort of different structures to that fund. A little bit more specific in Ward 2, which is now called Ward 2 rather than Hope Township, that interest was to be directly related to levy.
Right.
Within the municipality of Port Hope, they didn't establish that. So it was just incorporated in the general funds. And that's where you said as an audit, it would be tough to go back and figure out where that money went specifically. I mean, it could be done, but still.
Mm-hmm.
So has that gone any distance towards answering the questions of, I know there's been some legal action in regards to that, and also there was a lot just before the campaign where there was a lot of being said about what's going on in Ward 2 with that money. So have you addressed that now directly? Has that been settled?
No, the court case has not been settled, and obviously, you know, commentary on that is not going to occur here. But the intent of what the original agreement was and what council wanted to do, I think, is being met to the letter. There are some things we can't do until the court case is settled, but it was really imperative that these decisions be made, you know, in a proactive way in the interest of all the citizens of the Ward 2, not just the two proponents of the court case.
Have you gotten any feedback from Ward 2 residents now after this has been put in place?
Yeah, the feedback generally is good. I think to the point about Ward 2, Ward 1 issues, it's an area that we are discussing and intend to talk about further, because it wasn't just a monetary thing. It was behavior, leadership, administration, questions, how people were treated. There's a lot of things that I think people in Ward 2 felt that they were at a disadvantage, economically perhaps, you know, with services, what have you. And that's debatable, but fair enough to at least put on the table. In Ward 1, unfortunately, I think the same similar feelings were council and the administration was separated from the people. And it wasn't a ward issue. It was generally both wards, you know, that felt that way. Ward 2 had a little more, you know, gas in the tank to, you know, feel, you know, disadvantaged because of maybe economics or services, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you're also going to be saving money at, obviously, is going to be salaries, because there's been a lot of change in the structure at Town Hall. Can you talk a bit about what you've done, the actions you've taken over the last few weeks?
Well, I think we are trying to realign, administrative costs generally. I guess everybody's heard that saying, you know, if you continue to do the same thing and expect a different outcome, it's not going to happen. The structures of the municipality and maybe the department's roles, responsibilities have been there for probably 16 years without change. The economy's changed. Social requirements have changed. People's involvement have changed. You know, and I think it really is imperative that the administration and the council, who is representing the people, you know, undertake the same sort of changes. So this is the first step of, you know, trying to get, you know, a different strategy moving forward, a longer-term vision, and starting to incorporate and align the resources that will actually achieve successfully the goals we like to outline.
Well, if one was to look at what happened over the last couple of weeks, it seemed to be quite targeted. I mean, there was some senior people that were removed, but there was also tourism and economic development seemed to be two key areas. Now, I don't want to talk about individuals, but in terms of your own plans, is not economic development and tourism important to Port Hope?
I think it's critically important.
Okay, so then
absolutely.
Why the staff changes then?
Because the department wasn't aligned with really a return on investment. We haven't seen a lot of economic growth. We don't see organized tourism. So the reality was, I don't think it was working well. It's not that it wasn't important. And as you said, it's not about the people. I think, again, when you realign and try to restructure, is tourism important? How important is it? And how do we measure it? And how do we move forward? Is economic development, and we've talked about this even on this show before, mm-hmm. are we looking for industry to come here, or are we looking for the changing demographics? Is the cottage industry more important? Are we becoming an arts and cultural center? Are we becoming a business center? I think we need to take a deep breath and look at those. And that area was costing us about $500,000 a year without, you know, having significant design behind it. It's unfair to ask people to do jobs when they don't have a real good understanding of what's expected.
Why couldn't that happen in the context of then of the current structure? Why was it necessary then to sort of reboot from ground one? Why was that so radical a change needed?
Well, I think we needed to address the current costs so that we could invest in the future. Mm-hmm. Some of those costs are administrative, which were really high costs. I think only maybe 3 out of 50 municipalities you looked at had a director of economic development, and we had a director. So some of the structure, I think, was not really lined up with the resources being efficient moving us forward.
What about the at the top, the CAO's position? And I noticed you've been restructuring that upper tier as well. How what's your vision for how that's going to be run? Are we going to see a new CAO? And if so, how is that going to fit into your new plan?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see a new CAO. I don't know yet. Most municipalities our size do have a CAO, but our CAO resigned, and I think that created an opportunity in a way for us to relook at the whole structure because it does start at the top. And we have, Bernardi is now acting as, the administrator, senior administrator. And then the departments underneath all of that, the reporting structure, is becoming a little bit different. So the culture is starting to change. We had a very nice public meeting on the 15th of April. And it was quite surprising how enthusiastic the staff got and how involved they got meeting the public, and the public were out. I gave a half-hour talk, and I thought, well, after that, people will run away. They stayed around for an hour and a half and talked to staff, and really, I think the engagement was high.
I understand that speech is actually on the Port Hope Ratepayers Association YouTube channel.
Yes, it is.
And you can watch the entire thing. It's about 30 minutes long, and you can see the report if they want to. I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, what I wanted to ask, we do have a caller online, though, so we're going to have the caller come through, and we're going to let them ask their question, and then I'll get back to my own question in just a minute. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you doing?
We're doing good. How's yourself today?
Oh, pretty good so far. Bright and sunny. Beautiful day in Port Hope.
They're all beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah, well, there you go. Just ask the mayor.
Welcome to the show, Ed.
Thanks. Yeah, I got a couple of questions here for Mayor Sanderson, if he would be so good as to answer them. Are we looking at some of our departments joining the county? Is that why some of these changes are being made? Another question I had was on the business park. I understand there has been property sold, and I'm under the impression that there was a time limit when the property was sold to when something had to be built on it. I was just wondering if that's true or not.
Okay, so the first, if I can paraphrase your first question, is the town looking to amalgamate certain services with the county? Because that's
exactly
really what you're asking.
Yeah.
And the other question becomes with regards to the industrial park.
Yep.
I also had a question from another caller as well, so I'll throw this one out at you at the same time, because your question is pretty much the same. What is the status on the industrial park? It seems to be there's a lot of money being spent by the municipality on getting something going there, and yet nothing seems to be going. And now Ed's saying that portion of it may have been sold. Is that your question, Ed?
Yeah, I was just wondering if there is a limit on, like, if somebody purchased it. Evidently, one was purchased. Isn't there some kind of limit on when that has to actually be done with it?
Can I answer the first question first about the county?
Sure.
I'm on the county council, as you would know.
Yep.
And I think within the county, and there's a lot of good services, there are some that can be shared and assisted with. But I also think between the municipalities, so I'm on very good terms with, Gil Brockeneer and the group over here, and we're also looking at shared services. So I think when you look at a community level, we're looking at where we can get some efficiencies. But as for the county doing those services for us, the answer is not. As to taking some efficiencies, and let me use as an example, the economic development or the tourism area. Yes, it's countywide, but it also has to be municipally focused and driven as well. And so we are looking for more cooperative efforts, more aligning some of the resources. And so internally, I'm trying to drive that within the county as well. So shared, yes. Having them provide some of those, no. I know that, say the archive service are being provided by the county, and there's some things the county, I think can facilitate better than we can. But I think the municipalities will continue to be autonomous to a level. To some high level, I think, as we move forward, the two communities of Cobourg and Port Hope are kind of gateway to Northumberland. And I think we have room for a lot more cooperation there. I mean, Cobourg has a lovely beach. We have a nice river. It's the community seems to be moving back and forth a lot more freely and comfortably than they did maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
Do you find that attitude changing, the old Cobourg-Port Hope rivalry, or, not being able to work together?
Yeah.
And because it they actually couldn't work together. I just wondered, is that changing?
I really think it is. You know, I've got some businesses downtown Port Hope, which are hospitality-type businesses, and we could not survive in those businesses if people from Coburg and other municipalities around us weren't coming in. Right. And I think vice versa. I'm over here a lot. If I go to the liquor store, they all know me, so I can't hide when I'm buying the bottle of wine.
There you go.
Yeah. I want to talk about the business park for a second as well, though. I can't directly answer your question if there's a timeline, because I don't know that. There is one development going in there now, and it's a chiropractic
office. Been going in for a couple of years now.
Well, it's coming to where it's, you know, fruition. It's being built and what have you. The other thing with respect to, if you want to call it industrial park, I'm not sure that's an industrial park or, you know, a business park.
Right.
And I'm quite worried, not like in the bad way, but we had 50 acres of good industrial land that was serviced that we did, and it kind of got piddled away. We got Viceroy Homes up there now, but then the land kind of got filled with local people. This piece of land is quite valuable, and it's serviced, and I'm not really going to be shy about not trying to push it too hard right away. My concept is to get Port Hope in some sort of shape, and Ed, it's like inviting you over for dinner. You know, I'd like the house tidied up, and I got to have some food in the fridge before I invite people. We can get people off the 401. We can get people coming to the community. But if they don't find the services and they don't enjoy the experience as much as what we would hope, then I think we've done ourselves a disservice. And I think once we build the community up so the values are there and people see it as a community they would like to live in, all of a sudden, I think we'll start to see some demand there. And I think we should be very selective before we start just filling it in with, random businesses here and there.
Well, we have so many empty places now. I mean, down where I am, right across from me is the Dole Bargain Shop, and down the road is the Canadian Tire.
Yeah.
Do we need new buildings built, or do we need to fill the ones we already got?
Well, I think both, to tell you the truth, and I think they're going to be different. The ones downtown, the Canadian Tire building, as you know, the Firefighters Museum people are very interested in it. We're very supportive. I was just in there the other day with the Canadian Tire people. Looking through it, it's on a floodplain, as you know.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of an eyesore for Canadian Tire, so we're working with them pretty hard. The bargain shop, we're looking also. There are people looking at it, so there is an interest. But until such time as something comes through, the municipality can only support people looking at it and try to look at zoning changes if needed, if they're appropriate. We've got that old file factory sitting on the river. That's a real eyesore that we would love to do something with. But it's privately owned and it's being maintained and the taxes are up to date, so we're somewhat limited.
Now, with the economic development thing, is there a workbook? I know on Parks and Rec we've kind of developed a workbook to, if you want to put on a concert, this is what you have to do, this is who you have to go and see. Has Port Hope got its act together again on new businesses coming in, like what is required, who do you have to see so that you don't end up with 20 visits?
Yeah, I think we're not too bad on that one. There is a good process identified, and I think if you go into the offices, that'll be outlined, your permits and your requirements. But I think the big issue is that we don't sort of have a master economic plan,
right?
To say, what kind of businesses do we want? What do they look like? And if you looked at, say, the downtown area, and you wanted to look at the businesses, although it's free enterprise, it would be nice to help design and see what businesses would do best there and then try to attract them specifically, rather than just hoping a fish comes by and you catch it.
Yeah. Well, I hope some of them fish come down Mill Street.
Absolutely. thank you for your call, Ed.
All right.
It was worth fixing.
And thank the mayor.
And there you go. That was Ed White, one of our regular listeners and a regular caller here to Northumberland 89.7. We're going to take a quick break. We've got to pay some bills. And we will be right back with more of our conversation with Mayor Bob Sanderson, the mayor of the municipality of Port Hope. Stick around, listeners. And welcome back to the Drive Time. Sorry for the dead air there, listeners. Joining me in the studio, Rob Washburn, e-journalism professor at Loyalist College and my co-host on Consider This every Wednesday. And Bob Sanderson, the mayor of the municipality of Port Hope. Thanks to Ed White for giving us a call. The lines are still open, by the way, if you'd like to give us a call at 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. We would be remiss if we didn't mention the Port Hope Panthers, folks. They won last night. I believe it was last night in Game 6. They beat Essex. Essex leads the series. They led the series 3-2 for the Smaltz Cup. Game 7 will be on home turf. Port Hope Panther fans at the Jack Berger Sports Complex. And that's on Friday night of this week. And the Panthers have not won the Smaltz Cup since 1951, if I remember correctly. So it would be really wonderful for them to win on home turf. Would you not agree, Mr. Mayor?
I certainly would. And the comeback, I think they were down 3-0. So like the rest of the community, we come back from that adversity and we win. That'll happen.
That's it. You can knock them down, but you can't keep them down. That's the way it rolls, folks. One question that came up, I actually had a few people send me this question, this issue for them when it comes to the municipality of Port Hope, and they say customer service at Town Hall stinks. They'd like to see a more customer-friendly approach to the way ratepayers and citizens, even those who are going in to pay parking tickets, are treated. They feel as though, now I don't know if that's a morale issue or what, but that is that something you've heard in the past as well about folks going into Town Hall and...
Well, not just Town Hall. I mean, I think Public Works, Planning Department, I think it was sort of a universal complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Town Hall got the best marks, to tell you the truth.
Really? Okay.
And I can tell you just, I know that there's a legacy of that, and it's hard to change that sort of concept. But I really think if you came in now, you would find a difference, and it's being actively dealt with. So the staff is being, you know, not trained. They're not dogs, but by the same token, the culture requirements are in front of them, and you know, being polite, realizing that you know taxpayers don't have all the, you know, information they need, and that they ask it, and not to be defensive. Those kind of things are things we're incorporating strongly.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from leadership. My door's open all the time. I can't remember getting angry about anything. It's not worth it. Too much wasted energy. But I think. You know, it starts to, you know, go through. As I was telling you about the 15th, the staff was out there meeting with people and went on for an hour and a half, and everybody was happy.
If we could just step back for a second, you were talking about cooperation with Ed, and one of the things that has been discussed before about shared services is policing. Mm-hmm. And what's your vision for the future of policing if you're looking at opportunities for cooperation and shared service?
Yeah, to be explored. I guess my fundamental belief would be that the people of the community should make the decisions. Having a municipal police force has a lot of advantages, and obviously the people in Port Hope wanted to have it, and the people in Hope Township wanted OPP. So that's okay. We have a shared resource, sort of. But the cost is a lot different. I think Cobourg has exactly the same situation. There's a lot of cooperation between the two police forces. I know that the chiefs go back mm-hmm. and forth, and there's a lot of dialogue, and it's extremely cooperative. From an administrative perspective, yes, it's separate, but it's kind of like really close. Is there a potential in the future? I think it's going to be up to the people. You know, I don't know 10 or 20 years from now, but I think in the foreseeable future, it'll stay the same. I think when people look at the cost, that will be a driving factor. If the cost of fire and police are really, really large, they may be willing to look at other solutions. But from my perspective, if the people want to pay for municipal police forces and that's a higher cost, but they think they get better value for that for themselves and they feel safer, so be it.
You shared a bit of your vision for the downtown in your earlier comments. And during your State of the Union, you said that you felt that the HBIA was not functioning well. Could you elaborate upon that and mm-hmm. what you see going on, please?
Yeah, I'm pleased to say I can tell you now, I think it's improved a lot. The HBIA is not a committee that is ruled by council. We do provide the funding through parking revenues, et cetera, but their mandate is separate. They cannot be run out of town by council, and it's not a committee of council. It is an HBIA. So when we looked at all our committee reviews and trying to look at where we should have resources, where we're moving forward, the HBI stood out as a body that is a very important potential body but wasn't functioning, in our opinion, well. So we approached them. As an example, in their annual general meeting, they had only the three executives show up. And yes, they have a legacy of successful things, but their membership wasn't giving them support. And even as important or more important, the municipal council was not ensuring that they were running to their mandate well. So they didn't have the proper budget reports. They didn't have the members joining in the proper way. So I think it was a two-sided situation where council had really let the HBIA down, the members had let them down, and they were sort of stuck in a hard place. out of all of this now, council is very strongly supporting them with clear direction, so they have to follow the mandates. The last meeting they had 18 strong members come out and support them. So I think within the next few weeks, we'll be able to have a very cooperative and valuable asset that will look at they're technically they're supposed to beautify the downtown. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm happy to say I think this is going to be a happy ending story.
So was the activity of council then something you felt lit the fire under these folks to get them moving towards what they should have been doing all along?
No question. And I've stated publicly, I think we could have handled it better. Mm-hmm. Our communication, we're trying to say we're good communicators. I don't think we did it that well in that case. But I really think the outcome, is good. And I've extended, apologies on part of the council and personally for maybe not overseeing that as strongly as I could to make it a more positive experience, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I did get the impression from speaking to the HBIA chair there that it was a bit of a carrot-stick philosophy, and they didn't appreciate that. So I'm sure your apology was well-received by those folks. The other issue, of course, becomes the membership of HBIAs. I mean, I was a member of the DBIA in Coburg, and typically the way these organizations run is that they're run from the board, and if they have someone who's a coordinator employed by the board working for them, as they do here in Coburg, that's how things get done. Members, I got to say, membership participation on the part of BIAs, and it's probably typical across the province, that members, unless there's a problem, you don't hear from them. Unless there's a member who's, when my wife was the chair of the BIA in Coburg, it was the same deal. If there was a problem, yeah, you heard from the membership. But if there wasn't a problem or a perceived problem, nobody said anything.
Just like being a politician.
So it's got to be hard, especially for HBIA. I mean, you mentioned the fact that when you went to the meeting, there was only the three representatives there. Nobody else showed up.
Well, I didn't go, actually.
Well, okay, sorry. I misspoke. You weren't there. But the folks that did attend said basically it was the executive and that was it. And that was the way it was for many of the DBIA meetings that I went to in Coburg when I was a member. So it's very difficult to get, unless they've got a bee in their bonnet, unless there's a problem, they're not going to show up. So how do you encourage the members of the HBIA to respond to something like that?
Well, they seem to be responding because I think if the structure's stronger, the communications are better, and they have the chance to voice their opinions and it's done appropriately, I think you will get participation. I don't think you get participation very much when there's nothing being done. So
right.
I don't want to go to a meeting if I'm sitting there and it ends up that nothing's being done.
Mm-hmm.
The same comments, I would say, apply to, the public engagement in strategic planning going forward for the community. Everybody shows up, and I actually stated this when I was talking the other night. Everybody shows up when you're mad, and I need to figure out how you can show up when you're happy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How do you get the happy people to show up? Now, one question that I did get as well, another question, I got several actually, so thanks to the listeners who responded to my request for questions yesterday. Summer's upon us, and we've just decimated tourism. What is the municipality going to do about that? Now, I hear through the grapevine that there's the possibility that there's going to be temps hired on to do some of the work. Does that sort of go in contravention of, you've let some people go, now you're going to hire temps to do their job? I mean, in this world of litigation, that could raise the ire of some folks.
Yeah, I'd like to be clear on one thing. Everybody who has lost their position has been treated extremely well, right, and valued as an employee. Their contribution to now has been valued, and the discussion around it was all very positive from a municipal perspective. It's really trying to align resources, but we also recognize that when you make this kind of a wholesale change, there are some services that are going to be in jeopardy, right? Whether it be communication or somebody's got to at least be at the desk when somebody goes in, that kind of thing. So I think that's where we're looking to say if a service is going to fall down flat, We need to shore it up to some degree. Short term until we have a broader strategy. By the same token, I think you'd understand that you can't implement a long-term strategy, make all the structural changes, then go retroactively and go and then say, okay, now that we've all got it figured out, you all have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's a case of we do have to tear it down apart a little bit, rebuild it. It's like renovating those old houses in Port Hope, which I own a couple. Sometimes you tear things down and see you have to do more. And other times you go, well, it's a good thing because we're going to fix this.
So is there a possibility that some of the people that were let go will be rehired then down the road?
It would depend on the job applications and the job descriptions. So nobody who's been let go would be exempt from applying you know, if we restructured and had a different position. The positions that were there may not be exactly the same. That's all.
Right. Well, we're going to take another quick break, folks. I know Rob's got some more questions for you. And if you have questions, listeners, please feel free to give us a call at 305-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. We will be right back after a few words from more of our sponsors here at Northumberland 89.7. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to the Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. Sorry for the dead air, folks. I have no producer today, and we are recording this broadcast for posterity so that they can put it up on the Port Hope website. Yeah, that's right. That's why we're recording it also, so we can podcast it here at Northumberland 89.7. We do have another caller on the line. You may recognize his voice. I'm not sure. He calls himself Psychotic Reaction. Welcome to the show, sir.
How you doing? I would just like to say one thing to the mayor. I attended the open house that they had. Thought that was a really excellent idea. And one of the things that was brought out is that according to all the red dots, people are really, really, really interested in getting the Gani trails, getting it used, exploiting its potential. And so I was just wondering if the mayor had any comment on that.
Bob?
I'd love to make some comments. That it was probably one of the most pleasing things, and it was an interesting thing to visually, so the listeners understand, we gave everybody in the audience three red dots, and we had a list of sort of priorities, and they could put the dots against their personal priorities, and they also had the ability to, you know, add different priorities that maybe we hadn't put up there. The number one priority was using the Ganarask River as an asset, and it was a higher priority than reducing costs, which was pretty interesting. And so I think it gives us a pretty clear picture that we should invest in the river, that it is a big asset for the town, one of the major ones. I mean, we talk about the countryside, we talk about, you know, the Capitol Theater, Trinity College, that kind of stuff. The river has been, I think, an unrealized asset. And my favorite topic for the last couple of years is to try to make a river walk. And that would go from the lake at least up to the fish ladder, and preferably over time, I'd love to take it right through the entire community, you know, right up through the countryside, up through the Garden Hill area, that kind of thing. That would be fabulous.
I can foresee bicycle paths and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that that the town could do. Now, does this fall under economic development, parks and rec? Does it fall under tourism? I mean, if you look at the Gani race that just passed, I mean, holy mackerel, there were 10,000 people there, you know?
Yeah.
That was unbelievably successful.
It was. We lucked out with the weather, and I guess the stars lined up for us as politicians, too, because it was the one thing we didn't cut from a budget perspective.
suggestion.
We lucked out this year, because if the weather had hurt us, we would have looked a little bit differently at it, I suppose. Yeah. But to the point about the river, the old railway line used to run up parallel to it, the Midland Railway. So I'm trying to look into see how much land you know, is still available or the municipality still owns, because those trestles are there. We could make a really nice river walk. My criteria would be that it has to be obviously safe, well-lit, clean. A mother with a stroller should be able to go from top to bottom without lifting the stroller. And then I think we need to get some transportation back, too, so people can walk one way, but if they wanted to bike back or, you know, get a transit back.
How's it go with the Ganaraska
Conservation Authority?
Conservation Authority. Like, there seems to be butting heads there.
Well, I don't like to think we're going to butt heads. I think we have to come to mutual agreements that you know, whose jurisdiction and what we can and can't do. But I don't foresee it as being insurmountable at all, but I don't see anything as insurmountable, quite frankly.
Well, I enjoyed the open house that you had. I thought it was a really good idea to let people pick what they wanted, and I think the people chose. So hopefully we can do something with it.
Well, we will. We will. That's what it's all about.
Well, thank you again for your call, sir.
Okay.
Bye-bye now. And just a reminder to listeners, if you're going to call us with a question, please, if you could turn down your background radio, it's hard for us here in the production room to try and keep from getting the feedback. So, again, thanks for your calls. Really appreciate them. If you'd like to make a call, please do so, 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. You know, I had the Art Gallery of Northumberland here, and I had the Friends of Music here as well. They were talking about how they went to the town for some money, and they were denied. And the Art Gallery was particularly put up because they'd gotten money in the past from the municipality. Can we talk about how that went down? Because I know there are a number of groups that do receive arts funding from the municipality, and those are groups that put together a pretty comprehensive business model when they go to the town and say, you know, we'd like to get some funding from you. This is what we bring to the town. And I know that there's a big impact to the municipality from places like, you know, the Capitol Theater, just to mention one. And I should note here that that my wife is an employee of the Capitol Theater, and so I don't want anyone to think that there's anything hinky going on here. But I know that the Art Gallery of Northumberland came to the town asking for money, and I know they were denied. And I can only assume they were denied because they didn't put together a comprehensive business plan. And again, I'm assuming. Can you talk to us a little bit about how groups get funding what groups qualified and why they didn't?
You know, out of a budget of millions and millions of dollars, mm-hmm. most of the debate goes on about $150,000 because they're emotional community organizations, you know, who need to be funded.
Right.
Mostly they want to be funded on emotion. You know, we're good for the community. But, you know, again, if the plan doesn't have some, you know, sense to it, some financial, you know, wherewithal, you know, some return on investment or some structure that we can justify, it's hard to give away taxpayers' dollars because, I mean, some would want us to give it to fishing. Some would want it to give us to boats. Mm-hmm. Some would like to give it to bird watching. It's all there. And it's the hardest part of the budget, you know, to deal with. But it does get down to the fact that it needs to be a viable, you know, proposition that council can warrant spending tax dollars on. The Capitol Theater is a prime example. It brings a lot of economic value to the town. By the same token, you know, many years ago, the Niagara Peninsula vineyards were basically government subsidized and weren't doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Gently, we'd like to try to make as many organizations viable as possible. I would love to give the Capitol Theater $50,000, knowing that they earned, you know, at least to zero, and that the $50,000 was going to build the business, not just support the business.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a tendency, and I'm not picking on the Capitol by any means because I'm a big fan and have contributed there too, but some organizations do have to, you know, become fiscally responsible and can't just put their hand out. And I don't say that's common, but I think, you know, this council
mm-hmm.
debated heavily and looked at every opportunity. In some cases, we, you know, turned funding down totally, you know, and that's very difficult.
Yeah. So what about the argument that supporting and sustaining cultural entities like the Art Gallery of Northumberland, for instance, brings a value in itself by promoting a cultural aspect to our society? And society without culture, of course, is anarchy, right?
Yeah, Port Hope has a very strong cultural plan, actually, and I think that to segment just say the art gallery itself out, we do have art galleries, we have independent art, you know, exposés, we have a lot of, I think, culture going on. In fact, I'd say there's almost a renaissance, you know, in this entire area for mm-hmm. theater, culture. So taking one organization and saying, well, that's going to have a major impact in a negative way, I think if they can get their act together and, you know, can see that things are viable, you know, they can come back next year.
One of the things we've done is talk a bit about the future. And I know that you're starting to line up to do a lot of work around strategic planning, not just for the short term, but also for the long term. I'm wondering if you could just frame out how you see the next couple of months rolling out as you start to put together these strategic plans to help you guide what you're going to be doing over the next few years.
Yeah, I'd like to, and if you can help me out with it, I'd be happy to hear suggestions as well. Public engagement is probably the number one priority. And trying to balance out how to get that, I think we mentioned earlier, when you're happy, can we get you out to really, you know, comment? And so we're going to be working on committees and organizations. We're going to be talking about the strategic direction for the town. Overall, the municipality, the countryside, it's all got to be enveloped into one community. When you put that all together, what we'd like to identify is what kind of a community is this going to be, say, in 15 or 20 years? What are the cultural requirements? What are the recreational requirements? You know, what are the economic? What are the infrastructure? And do that longer-term planning. You know, what are the assets? The assets are the countryside. The assets are the river. People say, well, it's the downtown. It's only one asset. The Capitol Theater is one asset. Trinity College School is an asset. they're not all independent, and I think eventually you'd like Port Hope to be the place you would like to live and live nowhere else. And what does it take to do that? And I think if we can get there, and I think I was saying earlier, if we can get people into the community and they have all the amenities they would like, the taxes are not going to be the major issue. You know, it's really going to be the quality of life that's going to be important. We recently, was able to stop Entec Rem, an incineration, conglomerate from coming. We don't want them in our community, and we need to figure out, why we don't want them in, and what do we do to stop these things, and what do we promote, and what do we keep away. The 407 is just around the corner. The population is growing this way. Look at Newcastle. Look at those. Are they ready for it? I don't think we are. And if we want to be, small town Ontario at its finest, we need to decide what is our population size, what can support the structure that we have, what keeps the bike trails going, what keeps the quality of life, what kind of businesses. And it's all piecemeal. It's why the capital expenditures have been cut back, because I really want to see a 5 or 10 year infrastructure requirement, so we don't just go, well, this street needs it this year and maybe we'll do a different street next year. And I really want to see that longer term, service requirement.
It's really interesting, because a lot of times in rural communities, you hear councils talk about open doors. Well, any business that could come here, we're glad to have them. Anybody wants to come and live here, we're glad to have you. You're actually talking about making choices about who's going to settle in your community, who's going to do business in your community, who's going to live in your community. Why is that so different?
Well, we can't stop a business from opening up, and I don't think we would, as long as it meets the criteria that they have to meet, from a municipal perspective. What I think we'd really like to do is strategically help those businesses that we know would really complement the services already in the community. So it's not a shut door for anybody, but it really is trying to identify if we need these services, how do we get them here? We should spend money getting those resources into town.
Well, on that note, we're going to bring it to a close. I want to thank the callers that called in, those that sent email questions, sent me messages on Twitter as well. I want to thank you for doing so. These shows are really good when we get the participation of the public, especially when we're talking about municipal politics, which, quite frankly, doesn't get enough airtime in most mainstream media. My guest, Bob Sanderson, the mayor of the municipality of Port Hope, I want to thank you, sir, for coming in, and we will have you back another time, obviously, once the dust settles, I guess, after the summer. And Rob Washburn, my co-host as well for ConsiderThis.ca and Consider This Live. I'm Dave Glover. You've been listening to The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. Thank you for tuning in. We're going to take you out with a little Elvis. Here's a little less conversation. Stick around for Cedar Rail at 7 o'clock. Satisfaction in me.